Pete, let's start with a very busy day yesterday and clearly a Dave Dombrowski and the Red Sox in a win now, right this minute mode.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And, you know, that's the way Dombrowski's been really since he took over the Red Sox now 15 months ago. And you look at all the prominent players that he's traded and all the prospects that he's traded, a number of those guys among the Red Sox best. He's clearly trying to position his team to, you know, not just make the playoffs like they did last year, but to win the World Series.
Well, they've certainly traded a lot of minor leaguers, but to only part with Travis Shaw from the Major League roster to haul in the three guys they got yesterday, it seems from the outside like this is a pretty good deal for them.
Yeah, I think so, too, and especially to get a guy like Chris Sale and not give up anybody off the big league roster. I think a lot of people in the industry were surprised about that. The assumption was, going back to July, was that, you know, Sale was going to require a real good player, somebody like, you know, like a Mookie Betts or Jackie Bradley, Andrew Benintendi, somebody like that. And the Sox were able to get him without giving up one of those guys and kind of damaging the major league team. Now, they did give up two very good players in Yoan Moncada and Michael Kopech, and those guys, both of those guys, really could end up being superstar players. But, you know, it's sort of a question. You don't know if they're going to be superstar players. The Red Sox do know what they have, and obviously Mookie Betts and Benintendi and Bradley. Those guys are now established, you know, in the case of Betts and Bradley, all-stars. So the fact that they're able to keep them really meant a lot to them.
People look at Sale's pitching mechanics and say, well, that guy could be an injury waiting to happen, but I feel like you could say that just about any pitcher in Major League Baseball. And you also mentioned the red flag in your column in the Globe about his temperament, which certainly flared up last season. Is that something that could be an issue in Boston, or the fact that he's surrounded by perhaps more talent than he had in Chicago, is that likely to keep things in a box?
Well, I think it's different when you come to a new team and you're trying to do your best to fit in and you're not the oldest guy, the guy who's everybody's looking to be a leader. I think you do have to maybe change your ways a little bit. And not that Chris needs to change his ways. He's been a good teammate. Everybody's has said that who's played with him. I think it's more of a, you know, how you react to situations with things that change, things that are out of your control. And, you know, he's an emotional guy, and I know from covering baseball for a long time, starting pitchers tend to be that way because they get, you know, one day out of five to kind of show what they can do. And when that day doesn't go well, when something happens, you know, they tend to get pretty upset about it. And it's not like a position player where they can just take care of it the next day. So I think what makes him such a good pitcher is that competitive fire, and sometimes it gets the best of them like it did last year. But that, I don't think it's anything the Red Sox should be concerned about.
It would seem that they have a surplus of starting pitching now, but do you think they'd be wise to be patient before they start shipping anybody out?
Yeah, you know, every time you think you have too much pitching, right, it turns out that you don't have enough at all. So it's a tricky thing because they can't fit seven starters onto the roster, obviously, and those guys don't have options. And you could probably put one of them in the bullpen, and you're probably going to have to trade one of them at some point. You don't have to do it now. I think you could wait and see what opportunities present themselves. You could even wait till spring training and just make sure you get through spring training healthy and then decide to trade somebody in March. There's always teams looking for pitching at the end of the spring training. But one advantage that the Red Sox have is this has been such a bad market for starting pitching. When you look at free agents and guys available in trade, there haven't really been that many. They could maybe take advantage of that and get a good deal for whoever they decide to deal.
We're talking with Peter Abraham of the Boston Globe about the busy day the Red Sox had at the winter meetings. Let's talk about the bullpen piece that they got early in the day. Tyler Thornburg, certainly the kind of guy they're looking for to be a key in the eighth inning.
Yeah, this is pretty much getting a similar guy to Carson Smith that they got a year ago at this time. And obviously Carson pitched three games and then needed the Tommy John surgery, and he won't be back until May or June. This guy, they're hoping Thornburg will be able to take that role and be the eighth inning guy. And he's very talented, had a breakout year with the Brewers, a guy who strikes out a bunch of people, handles lefties extremely well, somebody who they feel like they can plug into the back of their bullpen. And he'll set up for Craig Kimbrell. It allows them to put, you know, whether it's Joe Kelly or Matt Barnes, all the rest of their guys, in better positions to succeed and not put the eighth inning pressure on them. So theoretically, it should all come together when you look at the number of guys that they have. But it never works that way with bullpens. There's always ups and downs and injuries and everything else. So how that'll all work out, I think we won't really know for sure until spring training.
Mitch Moreland is a guy who had kind of an up-and-down year offensively, but did win the Gold Glove and has got a nice left-handed power bat. Is this also a sign, Pete, that they plan on rotating guys through that DH slot a little bit more?
Yeah, you know, they had a very specific player in mind when they signed Mitch Moreland. They wanted a left-handed hitter. They wanted somebody who could play first base. And obviously, he's that. And I think the way, in talking to John Farrell today about it, they see him as their first baseman when they're playing against right-handers. Hanley Ramirez would be the DH. When they're facing left-handers, they would probably have Hanley back at first base and then rotate the DH among some of their other guys and go at it that way. I think you see with a lot of American League teams, they spread the DH at-bats around. It's a chance to get a position player off his feet for a day, maybe, you know, get him a little rest, and you get to get use some of your bench guys. They're going to need to figure out ways to get, say, Chris Young into games. It would be good to get, whether it's, you know, Sandoval or Pedroia or, you know, anybody else, really, you know, some DH at-bats. And that'll probably be how it is, because unless you have a guy like David Ortiz, it's really hard to commit to having one guy as your DH and kind of losing that versatility on your roster.
Now, obviously, trading away Shaw, trading Moncada, it seems like it's Pablo Sandoval's job at third base. Do they really have a great deal of faith in him to come back?
Well, they say they do, and he's done all the right things since he's come back from that shoulder surgery that kept him out all of last year. They do have Brock Holt, and they're making it very clear that Pablo is going to have to earn that job in spring training, that he's not coming in guaranteed of anything. That they're making that very clear now, you know, even 3 months ahead of time before the spring training starts. So I think that's a good thing. You know, you don't want anybody to assume anything going into camp, especially a guy who's had a rough 2 years in Boston. So yeah, I think you look at it, you know, this is a guy who's only 30 years old, who obviously was a very accomplished player before he got to Boston, a guy they gave a lot of money to. And if he's just, you know, a league average player, that's going to be better production than what they got out of third base all last year. So it's not like they need him to carry the team. They just need him to be what he was when they signed him, and just be a good, solid player. And that's pretty much will fill what they need to have done there.
The first move the team made this week got overshadowed by everything that happened at the winter meetings, but that was extending the contract of John Farrell. Was that an important move for them to make to get that thing off the table and have some certainty about who's going to be the manager going forward?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I guess it was, and I'm sure if you're John Farrell, you appreciate the fact that they did it. For me, I don't know if that's really that big a deal, because if you're a team like the Red Sox, if they get off to a terrible start, you know, they can fire the manager and eat the second year of that contract without much difficulty. It's not like it's the kind of money that would give them pause. So I think there's always pressure to succeed when you're the Red Sox manager. I don't know that your contract's going to save you from being fired if they feel like it's time to fire you. So from that sense, I don't know how much it changes things, but at least it does keep Farrell from getting to spring training and be asked questions about being a lame duck, all that kind of stuff. You can kind of just put that behind them and then just worry about the team.
Hey, Pete, away from baseball, what did you think? I assume you read it. What did you think of the Springsteen autobiography?
You know, it was great. You know, I as somebody who writes for a living, I could tell that he had excellent people around him. The book was really well edited. It was tightly, you know, the way it was presented, I thought was really good. And it was, you know, the whole narrative of it, just the way he weaved in the stories throughout his life. I thought it was great. It was better than I thought it was going to be. Because, you know, obviously this isn't a guy who's written a lot of books. So, I you know, even if you're not necessarily a Bruce fan, I think if you're a fan of that era of music, you get a kick out of it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Absolutely. Hey, Pete, thanks for making time for us this afternoon. Always good talking with you. We'll catch up with you again soon.
You bet. Thank you.